seems like it's always Friday. Every time you turn around, it's Friday, right? Ah, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. Let's see how long you can stand it tonight, huh? Start with an email from Chris regarding farmers in Georgia. We talked about this last night, right? The Georgia Republican legislature here passed a bill that decided that illegal immigrants were just a little bit lower than roadside trash, and the state of Georgia is going to get rid of all of them. Okay, so all the Republicans signed on, and the reason they did is because their constituents told them that they wanted this, and Governor, what's his name? Nathan Deal, a real criminal himself, he signed the bill, and now all the farmers in Georgia are freaking out because there's no immigrant labor to handle the harvest. So millions of dollars of crops are rotting in the fields here in Georgia. Okay, that's what we talked about last night. Chris writes, last night I listened to your description of the plight of Georgia's farmers. 34 years ago, the same thing happened in the Yakima Valley in Washington State. Massive roundup of undocumented farm workers. The apple harvest came around and nobody to pick them. The brilliant plan was to let high school kids get out at noon, get out of school, and they could pick. The idea being, apples are picked and kids earn spending money. Win-win, right? Works great the first day. Not so well the second day, when hardly any kids showed up in the orchards. When interviewed about why they quit after the first day, the kids said they were not going to do that kind of work for the miserable pay they received. Bottom line was the orchard owners had to quickly round up and transport undocumented workers from Arizona and California to get the apples off the trees. Idiots. Looking forward to seeing you in Seattle next month. Chris, I wonder where Georgia is going to find undocumented, or as they say here in the buckle of the Bible Belt, illegals to pick all these Georgia crops. Have you heard the latest on Roundup? We were talking about Roundup, Monsanto's contribution to the death of the human race, the death of the planet, actually. Have you heard about this? This is at Huffington Post, and I think this is relatively new. The chemical at the heart of Roundup. And by the way, Roundup is the planet's most widely used herbicide. It's used in farms and gardens across the U.S. Matter of fact, around the planet. The chemical at the heart of that, I like the way this is put, is coming under more intense scrutiny following the release of a new report calling for a heightened regulatory response around its use. Come on, let's get to it. Critics have argued for decades that glyphosate, the active ingredient in Roundup, poses a serious threat to public health. Industry regulators, though, like the EPA and people who are supposed to watch out for us, because capitalism, left to itself, will murder anything in its sight, and eventually murder everything in its sight. Industry regulators appear to have consistently overlooked the concerns about this chemical. A comprehensive review of existing data. Nothing new here. Existing data released this month by Earth Open Source. That's an organization that uses open source collaboration to advance sustainable food production. You know what that means? You know, they don't conduct their own research. They use research that's already out there, already been conducted by scientists who had the wherewithal to conduct all these experiments. So open source used all this existing data. The report suggests that industry regulators in Europe, for example, whatever the equivalent of the EPA is in Europe, have known for years that glyphosate, originally introduced by Monsanto in 1976, glyphosate causes birth defects in the embryos of lab animals. Oh, I know what you're going to say, right? You're right, wingers. I'm not a lab animal. God damn it, I'm a human being. Well, there's more. Just hold on. Earth Open Source's study is only the latest report to question the safety of glyphosate, which is the top-ranked herbicide used in the United States. Monsanto. Monsanto will not be happy until they kill every living thing on Earth. You know that. Okay. Exact figures are hard to come by because the U.S. Department of Agriculture stopped updating its pesticide use database in 2008. Really? 2008. 2008. I guess that was during the Bush years. The EPA estimates that the agricultural market used 185 million pounds of glyphosate between 2006 and 2007. That's 1 year. Now, remember, this crap has been out there. This murderous poison has been out there since 1976. But the agricultural market used 185 million pounds of this stuff in 1 year, while the non-agricultural market used 8 to 11 million pounds between 2005 and 2007. Now, that's according to its pesticide industry sales and usage report for 2006-2007, published in February 2011, this past February. You see, they're always 3 or 4 years behind. So this is not coming from that particular stat is not coming from a bunch of tree huggers. It's coming from the pesticide industry sales and usage report. The Earth Open Source study also reports that by 1993, it's almost 20 years ago, the herbicide industry, including Monsanto, knew that visceral anomalies, that means your real serious internal organs, visceral anomalies such as dilation of the heart could occur in rabbits at low and medium-sized doses. Yeah, I know, you're not a rabbit. The report further suggests that since 2002, regulators with the European Commission have known that glyphosate causes developmental malformations in lab animals. What does that mean? Well, thalidomide produced developmental malformations in fetuses. Do you remember thalidomide? No, you don't remember it. You're not old enough. Look it up. Thalidomide. T-H-A-L. I-D-O-M-I-D-E. Thalidomide. Look it up. Okay, continuing. A Monsanto spokeswoman, Janice Pearson, said in a statement that the Earth Open Source Report presents no new findings. There's nothing new there. Move along, move along. This is what they always say, right? She says, based on our initial review, the Earth Open Source Report does not appear to contain any new health or toxicological evidence regarding glyphosate. Now, what she means to say is we know all about this. And she went on to say regulatory authorities that we own and independent experts that we also own around the world agree that glyphosate does not cause adverse reproductive effects in adult animals or birth defects in offspring of these adults exposed to glyphosate, even at doses far higher than relevant environmental or occupation exposures. End quote. And that's what Monsanto says. Of course, what she's leaving out here, isn't this tricky? You got to read these sentences very closely. Glyphosate does not cause adverse reproductive effects in adult animals or birth defects in offspring of these adults exposed to glyphosate. Now, it doesn't say anything about what happens to the spontaneous abortions, the miscarriages. Right? Now, remember, the right wing is completely against abortion. How about spontaneous abortion, you dumbasses? Does that count? More on this when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
I've stumbled on the side of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I crawled on 6 crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of 7 sad forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard.
Doing talk radio right from the left, it's more Mike Malone.
So the essential ingredient in Roundup, produced by Monsanto, the company that the capitalist organization wants to kill everybody on Earth, I don't know why, then they don't have anybody left to buy stuff from them. Maybe that's not their ulterior motive. Maybe their ulterior motive is just to make all this money, and they don't care what kind of poison they stick out in the environment because they're too stupid to realize that their own children will be exposed. What the hell? Never mind. Anyway, the essential element, glyphosate, causes all kinds of defects and death and destruction on a cellular level, on a placental level, all kinds of bad stuff to lab animals. Of course, we're not lab animals, are we? So it doesn't count, right? And Janice Pearson, a spokeswoman for Monsanto, more or less dismissed everything and said, well, there's nothing new here. Earth Open Source said, we're not coming up with anything new. This is stuff that's out there already. It's been out there. I like this part. While Roundup has been associated with deformities in a host of laboratory animals, its impact on humans remains unclear. One laboratory study done in France in 2005 found that Roundup and glyphosate caused the death of human placental cells, cellular death. Another study conducted in 2009 found that Roundup caused total cell death in human umbilical, embryonic, and placental cells within 24 hours of exposure. And as the spokeswoman for Monsanto said, regulatory authorities that we own, she didn't say that, I just added it, because they do own them, and independent experts that we own, I'm just adding that part too, around the world agree that glyphosate does not cause adverse reproductive effects in adult animals or birth defects in offspring of these adults exposed to glyphosate. And you know what? She's essentially correct. What this stuff does do, it causes cellular death. The death of cells in human umbilical cords, human embryos, human placental cells. Authorities have criticized Monsanto in the past for soft-peddling Roundup. In 1996, New York State's Attorney General sued Monsanto for describing Roundup as, quote, environmentally friendly and as safe as table salt. Monsanto, while not admitting any wrongdoing, agreed to stop using the terms for promotional purposes and paid New York State the cost of some of its executives' lunch that day, $250,000, to settle the suit. See how easy this is? When you operate in a capitalist society and you own the political system, you own the regulatory system, you can do any goddamn thing you want to do. And you do any goddamn thing you want to do. Because who's going to stop you? The government? You own the government. The regulatory agencies? They are totally ineffective. The scientific community? Well, you can always come back and say, hey, listen, you can issue weasel word statements like Janice Pearson did from Monsanto. You can deny something that you're not being accused of. It's the oldest trick in the book. They catch a burglar coming out of the window. His ass is out, his head is in, the cops grab him. I didn't kill anybody. Oh, okay, well then we'll let you go. Regulators in the United States, that would be the Department of Agriculture, the EPA, have said they are aware of the concerns surrounding glyphosate. The Environmental Protection Agency, which is required to reassess the safety and effectiveness of all pesticides on a 15-year cycle through a process called registration review, is currently examining glyphosate. Oh, good. They're examining it. Oh, good. A statement to Huffington Post, where this article appears, a statement from the EPA, written statement to HuffPo, says, quote, EPA initiated registration review of glyphosate in July 2009, 2 years ago. EPA will determine if our previous assessments of this chemical need to be revised based on the results of this review. EPA issued a notice to the company, Monsanto, to submit human health and ecotoxicity data in September 2010. In other words, what they're saying is, everybody, you know, stop with the getting your bloomers in a wad. We're on it. We are on it, EPA says. So what they're on, they're doing their 15-year review to see if anything is different from the last 15-year review. And some of these reports go back to 1976. What do you suppose the review will say?
The EPA has found that while glyphosate may have some adverse effects in under certain conditions, we do feel that at the present time there is no need to discontinue use of this very effective herbicide.
That's what they'll say.
Free zone.
Twenty-five before the hour. We let's see. Bottom of next hour, we will do our Friday night feature of podcast trivia, where we'll take a contestant. If you get the right answer to our trivia question, you win a one-year subscription to commercial-free podcast downloads of this program. I think it's time for Prairie 2. Short selling on Republican futures. So I haven't read this yet, so let's see how garbled the syntax is tonight. Right, Bruce? Crude oil has fallen by 7% as traders that were certain Goldman Sachs had the market fixed and that $150 a barrel oil was a certainty have now taken a bath in their own blood. Short sellers, those who bet the market will go down, have been cleaning up as the price falls. Short selling wasn't the smart bet, so those contracts would have been available cheap. I just can never understand all that, but that's Bruce, because I'm just not a capitalist. Anyway, Bruce goes on. If the smart money moves to a short position because Obama has promised to continue pressure on the market, then you could see the price continue to fall. Saudi Arabia would like to see $70 a barrel oil, but once a good old-fashioned market crash gets going, there is no bottom. Not that you need to cry for the oil producers. Most oil will pump from the well for under 20 bucks a barrel. And $30 a barrel will get oil from the most stubborn well. So they've been cleaning up for almost 10 years, and long term, there is always money to be made in oil. When Bush came into office, the price was $18 a barrel. And he ran it up to bin Laden's demanded price of $140 a barrel. But that only lasted until Bush crashed the economy. Now the man Bush couldn't find, that would be bin Laden, is dead. And the president who killed him is driving down the price of oil. The Congressional Budget Office estimates that if absolutely nothing is done by Congress, which would mean that the current Obama budget is maintained and all the Bush tax cuts simply expire after 2 years, the CBO estimates that by January 2017, the government will start to run a surplus. The one fly in that ointment is that this scenario would also allow the full implementation of the alternative minimum tax, originally put in place in the 60s to force millionaires to pay taxes and not dodge them completely with exemptions and deductions. This concept of the alternative minimum tax has been completely perverted by the Republicans since then, as millionaires and now billionaires don't pay the AMT on very much of their income, but the upper middle class does. Because it's not indexed to inflation, the tax threshold would now intrude on ordinary middle class workers without the series of annual raises of the threshold that the Republicans have allowed only after extraordinary concessions from Democrats. Bruce, I don't know. It's just hard for me to... Thank God my audience is smarter than I am. Bruce concludes, so the apparent reason that Republicans have walked out of the debt ceiling talks is that Obama is bargaining from a position of strength and doesn't need to accept any spending cuts. Mere inaction by Congress will allow Obama to campaign on the promise of a balanced budget. Then the question is, are the Republicans really to default on the debt? Their Wall Street masters won't be very happy if they do. Since Wall Street doesn't care who's in power, as long as they keep getting rich, the Republicans are screwed. Will Republicans give in or risk a complete meltdown? A meltdown could play into Obama's hands as well. The modest financial reforms that were passed when Democrats were in control of Congress gives Obama the authority to do away with much of Wall Street if they really get into trouble from such Republican intransigence. To the surprise of almost everyone, Obama does seem to be playing chess. PrairieNumeral2.com. Well, all right. But, Bruce, The Nation editorial that I got today disagrees. The Nation editorial says Barack Obama is trapped in ominous economic circumstances, partly of his own making, and time is running out for his presidency. The character traits that got him to the White House, you know, the cool style of avoiding sharp-edged conflict and mediating political differences, all that threatened now to make him a one-term president. Character is destiny. At this point, only Obama can save Obama, but to do that, he must change himself. Ooh. This grim prognosis may sound premature, but bad economic news confirms what we have been waiting, what we've been warning for months. That is, the president's strategy is failing. Bruce, people know this. The longer Obama persists in claiming things are on the right track, the more he damages his credibility. Severe economic distress is what defeats incumbent presidents. It's already too late for Obama to engineer an economic turnaround. Even if he proposes major new legislation, the GOP is sure to block it. Cynical Republicans are quite aware that what's bad for the economy is good for them, so disregard their pious claims. They are determined to make things worse by cutting government spending, although the economy desperately needs more aggregate demand. Even more bizarre, Obama is collaborating in this effort, making nice with enemies who have their hands on his throat. Well, yeah. Didn't Russell Simmons say that that's what we're supposed to do with Sean Hannity? That is what must change if Obama is to save himself. He has to force his opponents out into plain view and turn their vicious behavior into a political asset for himself. He can achieve this by demonstrating concretely whose side he's on. First, he must acknowledge that although his original stimulus helped avert a depression, it failed to produce a robust recovery. Next, he must propose a battery of emergency measures that deliver directly to citizens who are suffering. Job creation, foreclosure avoidance, prosecution of fraudulent bankers, and other interventions that will help ordinary citizens survive the hard times. He shouldn't overpromise on results already a mistake of his presidency, but he should make it clear that he intends to help people stay above water, however long the troubles last. This activism might seem out of character for Obama. Really? But great leaders change in adverse circumstances. Oh, my dear Nation magazine, Barack Obama is not a great leader. He has raised mediocrity to an art form, but he is not a great leader. Let me continue. This president does not seem to understand that he gains clarity with voters by explaining the true nature of his opponents, by explicitly sharpening the differences, by promising folks he will fight for them. No need for demagoguery. Simply stick to the facts. Obama made a gentle thrust in this direction when he said the Republican plan to put Medicare, to gut Medicare, departed from American values. Ooh, Mr. President, that was tough. An emergency recovery agenda would change the subject from deficit reduction to comforting citizens in desperate circumstances. A galaxy of progressives are on the case, launching grassroots actions to build popular pressure for renewal. A nationwide Rebuilding the American Dream Tour, sponsored by the Progressive Congress Action Fund, is scheduled for this summer. The activists should warn the White House. President Obama faces a growing army of discontented voters. Our advice to the demonstrators, don't be subtle. So, our good friend and correspondent, Prairie 2, I guess sees the light at the end of the tunnel, and the nation sees that light as the headlight of an oncoming freight train. And all because, I think this is just understood at this point, all because this president does not have the leadership qualities necessary. He's not a street fighter. He really is not. And this make nice with Republicans. What the hell is that? What does it take until Obama realizes? I mean, what's it going to take till Russell Simmons realizes that Sean Hannity wants to cut his throat and watch him slowly bleed? You know, Russell Simmons at Huffington Post yesterday, and I read it last night on the air, Russell Simmons is talking about, oh, well, Sean Hannity's right because he believes he's right. Oh, God. All right, what else we got? What is happening in Minot, North Dakota is horrible. The flood levels hit today set an all-time high, according to the National Weather Service. The river... The Souris River, is forecast to surge more than another 6 feet as waters rush into the area. The rush of water prompted overflowing of a lake near the city, exacerbating the region's flood concerns. I saw some news tonight. It's just horrible what's happening in Minot, North Dakota. And they can blame Canada for this one. No, not blame Canada, but that's where the water's coming from. The Souris River, which locals call the Mouse after the French translation, flows through the center of town, and the town is disappearing. Well, I guess God is just so pissed off at North Dakota, just so pissed off that he's doing this. Isn't that what Falwell would say? Oh, wait a minute, Falwell's dead. Oh, well, whatever. We'll be right back. In addition to the flooding in Minot, North Dakota, of course, CNN's reporting These rising floodwaters in Nebraska are getting near two Nebraska nuclear power plants. According to the U.S. nuclear regulators, those two plants have protected critical equipment from the rising waters of the Missouri River, even though flooding has reached the grounds of one of them. Of course they protected it, just like TEPCO protected everything at Fukushima. Of course. I mean, what capitalist organization, whether it's Japanese or American or British or German, would be so cavalier in their attitude about nuclear power generating stations and the reactors therein that they wouldn't protect critical equipment, right? CNN says the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is confident that these safeguards will prevent a disaster at either plant, even though the Missouri is expected to remain flooded for several weeks. Oh, well, good. Yay! You go, Nuclear Regulatory Commission, whose rules, by the way, are written by the nuclear industry. Who's this guy? Oh, the NRC spokesman, Victor Drix. Victor Drix said yesterday, they have surrounded all the vital equipment with berms. Oh, well, that's earthen humps. Humps of dirt? Oh, well, then, everything's okay. An 8-foot-tall, water-filled berm. I didn't know berms could be filled with water. 16 feet wide at its base, surrounds the reactor containment structure and auxiliary buildings, the NRC says. The plant has brought in an additional emergency diesel generator, water pumps, sandbags, and firefighting equipment as well, according to regulators. Well, that's reassuring. Do you live near this place? It's about 29 miles north of Omaha. The Fort Calhoun plant, which is the one 20 miles north of Omaha, was shut down for refueling in April. Parts of the grounds are already under 2 feet of water. But the Omaha Public Power District, which owns the plant, has built flood walls around the reactor, the transformers, and the plant's electrical switchyard. Well, then there's nothing to worry about. Absolutely nothing to worry about. The Cooper nuclear station, about 80 miles south of Omaha, remains operating at full power. The plant issued an unusual event declaration last Sunday. Unusual event declaration. Do you like that terminology? We have an unusual event out here at the nuclear power. Oh, yeah, what was it? Well, we shot a couple of rats, and guess what? The rats had 7-foot-long tails. Well, that is definitely an unusual event. The plant issued an unusual event declaration on Sunday as water levels rose, but the current level is 2 feet below the plant's elevation, according to Mr. Drix, Victor Drix, the NRC spokesdude. Mr. Drix said that the NRC will dispatch additional inspectors to the plant, quote, if conditions warrant, end quote. Additional inspectors. Now, what will they do, these additional inspectors? Are they qualified and trained in how to stop the flooding of a nuclear power station? Nah, that couldn't happen. Come on, Malloy. CNN affiliate KETV reported Wednesday that as a precautionary move, the Cooper nuclear power facility is keeping dozens of staff members on site around the clock. The station reported that about 60 people are sleeping on cots at the plant and that the staffers are being rotated out every 2 days. Remember, it was catastrophic flooding from the March 11th disaster at Fukushima that knocked out cooling systems at the Daiichi nuclear power plant, and that resulted in 3 reactors melting down and producing the worst industrial accident in the history of the human race. that the Japanese government still refuses to totally acknowledge, and for that matter, so does the American government. So does every government. Anyway, it says, CNN says, this year's Midwestern flooding has also led to a spate of rumors, of course, about the Fort Calhoun plant that Omaha Public Power and the NRC have been trying to knock down. Not the plant, but the rumors. The utility has set up what they call a flood rumor control page to reassure the public that there has been no release of activity from the plant. There has been none. An electrical fire June 7th did not knock out cooling to its spent fuel storage pool for about 90 minutes. Actually, it did knock out. That's what it says here. But the coolant water did not reach a boiling point before backup pumps went into service. Oh, yay. Mr. Drix, the NRC spokesperson, said people are getting scared by a lot of misinformation. It's primarily coming from those gosh darn internet bloggers rather than the mainstream media. None of them, those gosh darn internet bloggers, have bothered to check with us. Yeah, those gosh darn internet bloggers, they cause an awful lot of unnecessary worry and concern. Everything is fine at the two nuclear power plants sitting on the Missouri River, north and south of Omaha. Not to worry. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Let's do some, let's just push the envelope a little bit here and do our trivia, podcast trivia right now. If you'd like to play, the number's 877-996-2556. If you want to stay on the line and make a comment, we'll do that too. Let's kind of put things together. 877-996-2556. If you get the right answer to our podcast trivia question tonight, you get a one-year subscription to commercial-free Malloy program podcast downloads in your email box every day. Even if we screw up and don't have a show the night before, you still get something, right? One last thing here while we're waiting for you to call in. General David Petraeus said yesterday that President Obama's new schedule for drawing down forces in Afghanistan was, I love the diplomatic language, more aggressive. Obama's schedule for reducing forces was more aggressive than he, Petraeus, had recommended, and that Obama's schedule increased the risk that the military would not meet all its goals. Jesus Christ. After a decade, Mr. Petraeus or General, whatever the hell your first name is, after a decade, what are your goals? If you can't do it in a goddamn decade, are you kidding me? I mean, 10 years. World War I and World War II together were what, 7? Oh my God! Well, this is how they get advancement, you see. This is how, but there's no more stars for Petraeus. He's got his 4 stars, and there's never again going to be a 5-star general. I think Eisenhower. Wasn't Eisenhower the last one? So Petraeus has got his stars. That's all he's going to get. Now he's moving to head. What's he going to head up? The CIA? Oh, Jesus Christ. Really? The drawdown of forces, the piddling amount recommended by Obama, increases the risk that the military would not meet all its goals. The military has yet to meet any of its goals. Unless they're keeping something hidden from us. What goal has been met in Afghanistan? What goal was... Oh, that's right. In Iraq, they managed to have... what's his name? Saddam Hussein hanged. And next on the target is Gaddafi. We'll talk about that a little bit later tonight. All right. Let's do trivia. Jeff is in Los Angeles. Let's see on KTLK. Hello, Jeff.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm okay. You ready to play this goofy game?
I sure am.
All right. All you have to do is get the right answer, and you get the 1-year subscription to commercial-free podcasts, downloads, and The Molloy Show. All right, you ready?
Yes, sir.
Okay, let's hit the music, maestro. Oh, the producer was screening calls. Wait a second while we get the music. Doo-doo-doo. Ah, there's the music. Okay, here we go. As soon as we get the music down a little bit. One of the Republican candidates for president is the former CEO of a chain of pizza franchises. Tell me the name of the candidate and the pizza franchise. You got to get both. Is it A, Newt Gingrich and Tiffany's Pizzas? B, Michelle Bachmann and God's Little Pizza Shop? C, Mitt Romney and the Book of Pizzas? Or D, Herman Cain and Godfather's Pizzas? Which is it, Jeff? Wait a minute, where'd Jeff go? Wait, Jeff! There's Jeff. Yeah. All right, Jeff, which one is it?
I was so busy laughing. It was the correct answer is Herman Cain and Godfather's Pizzas.
Yes, 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 yes! All right. Oh, my God. What a...
Those were really good clues, I must admit. I was dying laughing.
Oh, well, good. Well, I inadvertently put you on hold, and I didn't hear the laughter. All right, Jeff.
That's okay.
If you hold on, Kathy will get the pertinent information. And thanks a lot for playing, and congratulations, okay?
Thanks, Mike. We love you.
Thank you. Take care. Take care, Jeff. All right. All right, now we'll take... We'll take some calls. If you want to comment on anything on the program, now's the time to do it. 877-996-2556. What else have we got here? Oh yeah, the schizophrenic House of Representatives, Democrats and Republicans. They don't know what to do. They don't know what to do about Libya. A resolution to cut off funding. For Obama's NATO involvement in Libya, resolution to cut off funding. Wait a minute. Is it cut off funding? I can't tell. Let me see. The Times says the House dealt a symbolic blow to Obama on Friday by resoundingly rejecting a bill that would authorize the operations in Libya. They rejected a bill that would authorize the continuing bombing, but it muddled the message somewhat by also turning back a measure that would have limited funds for the effort. What? The resolution to support the mission failed. 295 to 123, with 70 Democrats joining Republicans in a pointed show of defiance to Mr. Obama, who, by the way, has said he does not need congressional authorization for the Libyan operations. He doesn't need it. Only 8 Republicans supported the measure. The second measure the House rejected would have essentially prohibited money for direct combat activity, financing only support operations like search and rescue, aerial refueling, operational planning, and intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance. So both resolutions fail. So tell me, well, what is the House of Representatives trying to say? What they're trying to say is they want the black guy out of the White House. That's what they're trying to say. That's all they're trying to say. That's it. So the resolution to support the mission failed, but the resolution to cut off funding also failed, which means that this psychotic House of Representatives does not support the mission, but they're going to keep paying for it. Oh, my God. Now, I understand, according to the network news tonight, that the Libyans, the supporters of Gaddafi, misinterpreted the vote when this was, I guess something was lost in the translation, right? When they heard that the House had decided not to support the operation in Libya, they all went, whatever the Libyan equivalent of going wacko in the streets, like we do in this country after a home team wins a national championship in some sporting event. Well, the Libyans thought that meant that the bombing was over. So they all got in the streets and honking horns and waving their flags and cheering. And then, of course, they were perfect targets for NATO airstrikes. So another 150 of them were murdered or something. I don't know how that works out. But it's crazy. Under the 1973 War Powers Resolution, presidents must terminate unauthorized deployments into hostilities 60 days after notifying Congress that they have begun. I don't know why that doesn't apply with Libya. We'll be right back. Number here is 877-996-2556 if you want to comment on anything. This hour is being sponsored by Anonymous yet again. Thanks, Anonymous. You know who you are. Okay, a couple of corrections already. Michael in Roswell, New Mexico, I mentioned that Eisenhower was the last five-star general or the only one or something, and Michael writes, actually, Eisenhower was one of only several who attained five-star rank. General George C. Marshall, General Douglas MacArthur, General Eisenhower, of course, Omar Bradley in the Navy, Admiral William Leahy, Admiral Ernest King, Admiral Chester Nimitz, Admiral William Bull Halsey. In the Air Force, General Hap Arnold. He actually received the rank twice, once in the Army Air Force in 1944 and again in the newly formed U.S. Air Force. Ah-ha!
Thank you, Michael.
I know, I appreciate my research department. And the other anchor of my research department here, Prairie 2, weighs in, too, about a water-filled berm. I said I didn't know what it was. Prairie 2 writes, a water-filled berm is just a big plastic bag that is used to increase the height of a traditional dike, but are only good for about half their actual height as water floats in water. If the berm does breach and the plant floods, it depends on whether they can continue to pump cooling water to the stored spent fuel cores in storage ponds, as well as the active core of the reactor. If the cooling system itself is compromised, then water used to cool the fuel, if they can maintain it and avoid a meltdown, the excess emergency cooling water can drain into the environment, like in Fukushima, and down the Missouri to the Mississippi, and on down to the Gulf of Mexico, but not to worry, that's dead already. Jesus, God, I want to go home. I really do. From CNBC, Prairie 2, or Michael and Roswell also sent this in. He writes, do you think the optics of this aren't exactly what a man of the people would want to project? He's talking about Obama. Last night, Obama headed to the Upper East Side to wine and dine Wall Street. The Democratic National Committee fundraiser at a Tony restaurant, Daniel, cost attendees $35,800 each. And a source told Ben White at Morning Money that the event netted $2.4 million. So his calculations were that at least 67 financiers had come to the party. He said, quote, Wall Street may hate Washington, but sources tell Morning Money that last night's $35,800 per head event was a boffo success packed with hedge fund and private equity types, end quote. According to Deal Book, the menu included Maine lobster salad with roasted beets, duos of black Angus beef, braised short ribs with young spinach, and roasted tenderloin with stuffed potato and hen of the woods. The dinner was part of Obama's plan to win back the group of financiers that helped him cruise past McCain in 2008, many of whom were turned off by the president's labeling them as fat cats near the beginning of his term. Oh, we'll have none of that. And Prairie 2 adds, if Obama were serious about helping the country, this is the sort of thing that he would have determined to fix first. Instead, he wants to raise $1 billion to ensure his reelection. This is a textbook example of how to get it wrong. Like we've said before, it didn't take too long to understand that Barack Obama is not a leader. He's an orator. He'll make a great college chancellor somewhere. He'll teach a master's class or a PhD class or a post-grad class in history. But he is not a leader. And I'm not saying that as if I were one. I'm just saying you can look at what Obama has done in the 3 years he's been in office and realize that he is not a leader. Oh, well. All right, we have a break here. When we come back, we'll take some phone calls and do some other things. So it was Randy writing, I had a girlfriend back in 1970, a year after I graduated from high school. I went to Minot, North Dakota to see her. And found out that her father was one of those military guys who spent most of his time in one of the many missile silos in the area, North Dakota. Makes me wonder if those silos are on higher ground. She told me there were many surrounding Minot, North Dakota, and other things that I was not supposed to know. Randy in Mendocino. We'll be right back.
I'm walking down the street like luck in the roof. Got my hand in my pocket.
thinking about you. There's 300 men in the state of Tennessee. They're waiting to die. They won't never be free. I ain't hurting nobody. I ain't hurting no one.
Malone.
25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Anonymous. Thank you, Anonymous. Anonymous has sponsored several hours of this program, and we appreciate it. New York State Senate, the Republican-controlled New York State Senate, just passed by a vote of 33-29. A bill that allows that state to respect same-sex marriage contracts. So New York becomes the sixth state to recognize that people, regardless of their sexual orientation, for Christ's sake, that should be the least of a state's concerns, right? But that people of same-sex orientation can form a marriage contract. Now, all the evangelical Christians and the Orthodox Jews and the devout Muslims can all line up and just, you know, scream at each other about this. Nobody wants to come into your house of worship if you don't want them to have their marriage sanctified by a bunch of bigots, which is what you all are. So forget about it, all right? The state, which allows you religious bigots to perform these ceremonies, you can only do so if the people standing in front of you, rabbi or minister or imam, have a license issued by the state. You don't issue the license. Your God doesn't issue the license. The state issues the license. Why don't you get that through your heads? So the state of New York becomes the sixth state to say if people of the same sex decide they want to form a contract that involves marriage, they may do so. Why this is an issue? This is insane. There is an equal protection clause to the U.S. Constitution that all these religious bastards refuse to acknowledge. Well, to hell with you. To hell with all of you. So even Republicans eventually, of course, Republicans may have done it because of the economic benefit. It really doesn't matter, does it? With all the real problems going on, why would the issue of same-sex marriage so occupy state legislatures and the federal legislatures that they run around with their asses on fire talking about, well, Defense of Marriage Act. Oh, well, we got to do this or everybody's going to turn queer. Blah, blah, blah. 29 Democrats and 4 Republicans voted to pass. So when I said Republican-controlled New York Senate, yeah, but not by very much. 29 Democrats, 4 Republicans voted yes to give people of same-sex orientation the right to form a marriage contract. And the religious bigots now can run around with their hair on fire talking about how, oh, oh, it says in the Bible, the Quran, the Old Testament, or whatever, whoa! Get over yourselves. Just get over yourselves. Well, you religious people should be working to save your damn planet. Isn't that what your God told you? That you have dominion over the earth. So what do? You set it up so that it gets destroyed, rotted away, ruined, so none of us can live here. And you're worried about a couple of men or a couple of women forming a contract to get married, you bunch of religious bigots. Okay, calm down. Ay. Eddie is in Detroit. Hello, Eddie. Welcome to the program.
Mike, I disagree with just about everything you say, but why is it that of all the left-wing or liberal radio commentators and these people on TV and MSNBC, why is it that you are the only one that is acting on principle and opposing Barack Obama? Because Obama has done the same things that George Bush did. And yet every one of these left-wingers on the right that was lined up against George Bush is now hypocritically and contradictorily supporting the guy that's doing the same thing.
Have you ever thought about calling them? I can't speak for these people. I have no idea. I really don't. Two things. First, I don't listen to talk radio. It gives me a stomach ache. I don't listen to talk radio if it's liberal or conservative. I want nothing to do with talk radio. The only reason I do talk radio is because I did not plan my life right and I have to keep working. And this beats the hell out of digging ditches or building berms to keep water out of nuclear reactors. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, I don't know about that, but I will. I was the call to give you a hard time, but I can't do it now because you're the only principled individual on the left that's not catering to the established order.
Did you say the same thing about me when I used to bust up on George W. Bush's policies?
Well, I can't now. I can't. You're acting out of principle now, so if you have the right to go after anybody at this point.
Oh, I see. If I take a stand against a president, see, I don't care what party they're in. If I take a stand against a president because he's acting outside the Constitution, do you support me if that president happens to be a Republican like Bush was?
I may not support you, but I know you're acting out of principle.
Well, then,
and you're not acting.
But then,
you're not acting out of political consideration.
But then, what you're saying is that you're the hypocrite.
No, I'm saying that
you're acting. What you're saying is you don't have any principles. If I criticize and attack a Republican president because he acts outside the Constitution, and I attack and criticize a Democratic president because he acts outside the Constitution, and you then call me up and say, well, I support you when you attack the Democrat, but I don't support you when you attack the Republican. If that's not hypocrisy, Eddie, what is it?
I might support you. It depends on the specific issue.
Oh, so you have situational ethics. That's even worse. Thanks, Eddie. Appreciate it. Don't call my program and try to suck up to me with phony kinds of support like, ooh, you know, you're the only one with integrity. Oh, bat snot. If you really believed that, Eddie, when I used to criticize this little neo-fascist George Bush and his crime family, you would have called then and supported me, but you did not. So now you're going to support my criticism of another president acting outside of the Constitution, but because he's a Democrat, then you're going to say, oh, well, you're the only one with integrity. No, I'm not the only one with integrity. But you identify yourself as absolutely bereft of integrity. You don't have any. Oh, my God. Henry is in Blytheville, Arkansas. Hello, Henry.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, I'm just fine. Hey, look here. You know, I know a lot of people are upset, mad, and saying the president's outside the constitutional bounds on this stuff going on over here in Libya. But the problem is that everybody's forgetting, except the Congress and Senators, because they're not saying nothing, but right now they just put it on a lion showcase. That's what they're doing. The problem is 99.9% of the time they will be right as for violation of the Constitution of what the president's doing. But the problem is we're at that 1% of 1%. And the problem is those troops are not under U.S. control. They are under NATO control, a structure that we created during the end of World War II, that we donated to support it and use for any function that's necessary as long as we all agreed to it, and they did, and that's why they're there. Now, all of a sudden, they wanted the Senate and the Congress want to play showboat with the media saying, well, the president's unconstitutional. Well, the thing is, that 1-10%, that's what's in effect. In any other situation, he would be against the Constitution, but the problem is right now, they're not under U.S. control, they're not under our president control. Now, the president can call the commanding general of NATO and say, pull these particular group troops out, and they would do it. But the thing is, right now, they're under NATO control, not U.S. control. And see, that's a problem with the whole thing, because everybody in America thinks, well, only our troops should be at home, and only but yet we want the UN, we want the NATO, and everybody else to go do work around the world. But we're exempt from it. No, we can't be exempt from it because we're part of the world.
Well,
we got to be a part of it.
Well, that's true, Henry. That's a good point. That's the point I was trying to make and did make a week or so ago with a caller from Zimbabwe or wherever the hell he was calling from. Henry, thank you. I appreciate you checking in, pal. Take care. We'll be right back. Saying that it's all right. It's all right. It seems you went just a little too far this time. Bang, bang, bang! And down you go. It's just a job I do. The harder you run, the harder you fall. I'm gonna hard on you. Hard on you. I hope my aim is true. I got a name and I got a number. I got a lot on you. I got a name and I got a number.
Thank you, Anonymous. Dan is in Seattle listening on XM. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
All right. How are you?
Okay. Just had a question. What do you think about the Federal Reserve? You think it's sort of like if we had an oligarchy, that's an oligarchy, and they kind of run things behind the scenes? That's kind of... I did my research. It seems like they instituted it, and we've been at war ever since, you know.
Well, what do you think about it?
Yeah, I think it's kind of unconstitutional, and I think it seems like that's the imperial power of America right there. And I don't even know if it's owned by Americans. It's a private corporation. And... we have capitalism, but it's more crony capitalism because it seems like the bankers do so much behind the scenes that it's more of an oligarchy system. So it's not really the capitalism that was designed, you know, to benefit people with private property and stuff like that that the founders designed. It's been changed more to the British Empire model. Would you agree?
What I know about the Federal Reserve, Dan, I hate to admit this, but what I know about the Federal Reserve amounts to, enough information that would barely fill a ant's belly button. How's that for a analogy or metaphor, whatever the hell it is? But, I, like most Americans, I never paid any attention to the Federal Reserve. Didn't even know what it was, don't even care. at this point, I think it's ridiculous to give it any thought. I know a lot of people who pay attention to this stuff will say, Malloy, you're crazier than hell. They are the cause of all the problems. They are not the cause of all the problems, blah, blah, blah. I don't know what to tell you, Dan. I think that the cause of most of our problems has been U.S. foreign policy, whether that foreign policy took the shape of invading and occupying other countries, or took the form of invading them economically, or took the form of the some of these World Trade Organization agreements or NAFTA. The U.S. military, the trade policies of the United States, or not the trade policies, but the capitalist policies of the United States, always looking for cheaper labor, always looking for markets to exploit, always looking for death to deal. That, to me, is so much more important than the Federal Reserve. I'm still not even sure what the hell the Federal Reserve does. I mean, yes, I know what it does, but I'm not sure what it does. You know what I'm saying? And it's like a lot of things, when you get to the point where you realize you don't understand it, you don't know what makes it work, you just don't care. And again, I know, now Prairie 2 and Michael and Roswell, don't send me emails explaining it to me, because I don't care. I really, really, really don't care. Okay. Brett is in Akron, Ohio. Listen, I'm serious. Hello, Brett.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for taking my call. It's been a few years since I've spoken with you, and I remember asking you a few years ago if it could get any worse, and it seems that it has, but.
Hey, how are things in Akron? I mean, you guys are right at ground zero.
Well, it's slim pickings. I mean, there are good times and bad, but overall, I have a few friends who are teachers in Ohio here, and they're struggling. And and actually, I know a union president of a school around here, and they're kind of scrambling here with the Senate Bill 5, but. Mm-hmm. You know, and I guess that's directly why I called, or indirectly, but I don't think, with regard to your previous call, I don't think there's anything in the background. I don't think there's anything hidden. It's all out front, right in front of us, and there are people who are fighting to have their rights and their money and their jobs taken away from them, and it's like they don't know any better. So when I hear talk about the Federal Reserve and all these conspiracies, I think it's all out in the open, because right now they're getting rid of collective bargaining.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting rid of, they're taking taxes and putting more of the burden on people like myself who've got to work two jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's right in front of us. And I've got friends who are on both sides of the aisle, and those conservative friends of mine. They're saying, hey, we spend too much and this and that, and they don't get the big picture, and they're fighting to have their own rights taken away, and so they have to walk on eggshells with their employers so they can say, hey, please let me keep my job.
Brett, you make a very good point, and that is they're really, in so many of these areas, especially where it concerns financial chicanery and double dealing and dirty tricks, there's no need for conspiracies anymore. You're right. It's all out in the open. The banksters and the gangsters and the bastards who are destroying the economy, they don't need to hide behind anything. They just raise their middle fingers to the American public and to the government and to the military-industrial complex, all of which they own, and they just say, you know, this is the way it is. If you don't like it, that's just too damn bad. So you're right, Brett. I agree with you. Thanks, man. I got to go. There's the out music. Thanks, Brett. All right, what do we got next hour? A little bit more about the real objective of NATO forces in Libya, and a little bit about Michelle Bachmann and some other garbage. All right, stick around. Next hour is sponsored by Irish Dave. We'll be right back.
we go. Printer is closed. Maybe something will print now. This hour is sponsored by the Laura Pickles Welsh Driving School for Famous Arabian Women and Irish Dave. God cracks me up. Irish Dave. Sponsored by the Laura Pickles Welsh Driving School for Famous Arabian Women. Irish Dave. Irish Dave, thank you very much. I don't know about this driving school, but I'll take your word for it, dude. An email here from Bonnie in Irvine, California. This came in this afternoon earlier. She apparently was listening, you know, to a podcast, I guess, or just got around to emailing. I don't know. It really doesn't matter. But anyway, Bonnie in Irvine, California wrote, I just heard a caller on your show refer to Ron Paul as a libertarian. And once again, it was not recognized by the caller, nor by you, that Ron Paul is a selective libertarian. He does not believe that women have a right to terminate an unwanted pregnancy. What could be more anti-libertarian than that? Please, Mike, you of all people should make sure your audience is aware of this blatant inconsistency. Bonnie and Irvine. Well, you're absolutely right. I have to be honest with you. I did not know what Ron Paul's position is on terminating an unwanted pregnancy, but if it is what you say, Bonnie, and I have no reason to doubt you, then you're right. But most libertarians are selective, aren't they? And Ron Paul, I'm sure, is no selection or exception. As far as I'm concerned, they're all a bunch of phony bastards anyway. Yes?
Well, I think it's a safe bet that no libertarian would turn away the fire department if their house was on fire. Uh-oh. No. I'll just spit on it.
Yeah, and I wonder who libertarians call when they think there's a prowler outside. Must be the police department. I don't know. Who cares? As mentioned earlier in the program tonight, this news flash from the top U.S. Admiral, a top U.S. Admiral, Samuel J. Locklear, confirming to a U.S. member of Congress that NATO forces are trying to kill Muammar Gaddafi. And that the need for ground troops in Libya after the embattled leader falls is anticipated. Is that a surprise to you? That we're trying to kill? Yeah, Reagan tried to kill Gaddafi. Wasn't it Reagan? And they wound up killing his stepdaughter, stepson, so long ago. Remember that? Back in the mid-80s? House Armed Services Committee member Mike Turner. He's a Republican from Ohio, so you have to be a little bit cautious about believing anything he says, except give me more money, that you can believe. So I don't know, you know, he's a Republican. But even allowing for the normal process of Republicans, that is that they lie constantly. They cannot tell the truth. The truth for Republicans is an unattainable goal. They just tell lies. And then Russell Simmons pops up out of the weeds and says, well, that's okay. At least they believe their lies. Oh, wait a minute. That was last night's program. Anyway, House Armed Services Committee member Mike Turner, Republican from Ohio, reveals to the Cable website that U.S. Admiral Samuel J. Locklear, commander of the NATO Joint Operations Command in Naples, Italy, told him, Mike Turner, last month, that NATO forces are actively targeting and trying to kill Gaddafi. Turner said, quote, the UN authorization had three components, blockade, no-fly zone, and civil protection. That's what we were authorized to do. And Admiral Locklear explained that the scope of civil protection was being interpreted to permit the removal of the chain of command of Gaddafi's military, which includes Gaddafi, Turner said. Quote, he said that currently is the mission as NATO has defined it. He went on to say, I believe that we were targeting Gaddafi, and this confirms it.
He went on to say, I believe the scope that NATO is pursuing is beyond what is contemplated in civil protection, so they've exceeded the mission, end quote. Blah, 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 blah. Well, as you know, there was a vote in the House today that was defeated. The vote was to stop Obama by cutting off the money, and, of course, it didn't work. Now, what Turner is saying here contradicts Barack Obama's previous insistence that regime change is not the ultimate goal of NATO's involvement in Libya. He said, which is a claim that this admiral apparently still believes. He said, well, certainly if you remove Gaddafi, it will affect regime change. Oh, my God. Turner, this representative from Ohio, who has been opposed to the Libya war from the start, voted against authorizing the effort this morning. And that authorization resolution failed, 123 to 297. So the war goes on, or the bombing goes on, or something goes on. And, of course, the Obama administration, like the Bush administration before it, is not being straightforward with Congress. Of course, you can't blame them, can you? I mean, it's all just a stupid-ass game. Which side of the aisle, heavily financed by corporate America, by capitalist America, both sides heavily financed by capitalist America, which side of the aisle are you going to believe in any given moment? Are you going to believe the bought and paid for Democrats, or the bought and paid for Republicans, or the bought and paid for Obama administration? Who are you going to believe? I wonder what it's going to take for the general public in this country to finally realize what a lot of people have been realizing for quite some time, that the corporatization of our government is complete. There is no way in hell to change the direction of this government. I don't care who you vote for. Vote for your mama if you want to. It doesn't make any difference. It matters not. The voting machine software has been designed to ensure that no matter who you vote for, the capitalists are going to win. The corporatists are going to win. I mean, think about it. The whole voting process in this country has been privatized. Doesn't that bother you? Does anybody out there give a goddamn that the voting process in this country has been privatized to the point where you and I cannot see the results of the voting process because the software is proprietary information? That means somebody owns it. I mean, does anybody care about this? Why do you tune into this program? What's the point? You hear the same crapola every single night, don't you? Same stuff every single night. I very seldom vary from the theme. Oh, calm down, Malloy. It's all just a game anyway. It really is.
I want to be just like my president. I want to make more money than I can spend. I want to build more bombs than I can send. Somewhere I can even spell the name of. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I want a big, big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag across your sky. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century.
The Mike Malloy Show. Border to border and coast to coast, The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
Let's try it one more time. Border to border and coast to coast. All substance, no abuse. This hour is sponsored. I already said this, but I'll say it again. Irish Dave sent in the sponsorship. It is sponsored by the Laura Pickles Welsh Driving School for Famous Arabian Women. All right. Michelle Bachman, the crazy woman from Minnesota, who took all of her Klonopin or whatever she took before that performance the other night with the other six fools in the Republican Party. Over in New Hampshire? And tried to present herself as being rational. Michelle Bachman. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, as Steve Bannon points out in the Washington Monthly, her creativity is unrivaled in contemporary politics. Consider her remarks a couple of days ago to a gathering of the Republican Leadership Conference. As reported, Representative Michelle Bachman of Minnesota, the latest candidate to join the Republican presidential campaign, suggested that President Obama secretly wanted Medicare to go bankrupt. He does. So retirees would be forced to enroll in a new national health care law. Bachman knows this. This is what she said, quote, "This hasn't been talked about very much. The president's plan for senior citizens is Obamacare. I think very likely what the president intends is that Medicare will go broke, and ultimately that answer will be Obamacare for senior citizens." Woo! Oh, Michelle! Oh, my God! You figured it out! And as Bannon points out, Bachman's principal problem is that she combines the worst of two important traits. Number one, she's strikingly ignorant about public policy. And number two, she is stupendously paranoid to the point of delusion. And it's these two qualities with this crazy woman that leads her to come up with such odd theories. In this case, the unhinged Minnesotan believes Obama is secretly trying to eliminate Medicare, forcing seniors into the Affordable Care Act. Is there any evidence at all to support this? Of course not. But so what? In Bachman world, it's all real. And there are signs and portents no matter where you look. There are burning bushes. There are whirling dervishes. There are things falling from the sky. There are signs underneath oak leaves where caterpillars may be copulating in a way that leads Michelle to conclude that Barack Obama is trying to force all the senior citizens into Obamacare. I mean, this is madness, isn't it? This is mad. This is what the United States has devolved into. People like this, people like McCain, people like Obama, people like Bachman. I mean, look at the leadership class in this country. Just look at it. And if you still care, look at it and weep. But most of us just don't care anymore. We really don't. Bannon says, in practical terms, Bachman apparently thinks the president is secretly a right-winger. She believes Obama wants to end the existing system of socialized medicine for seniors and force these millions of seniors into the private insurance market. Apparently, Bachman is so screwed up. She's like scrambled eggs. I mean, there is no rational line of anything in her thought processes. Nothing. There's nothing there. Of course, there is a group of people who actually support what Bachman is laying off on Obama. They're called House Republicans. And the House GOP budget plan, written by Paul Ryan and endorsed by none other than Michelle Bachman, seeks to end Medicare and convert the program into a system that resembles the Affordable Care Act, which is what Obama, or what Bachman calls Obamacare. Bachman's conspiracy theory is that Obama secretly agrees with her far-right colleagues. Now, this isn't just wrong. This is mad as a hatter, crazy. Crazy. Remember the time she argued that the U.S. Census would lead to internment camps? How about when she warned of the one world currency because she got confused about what a global reserve currency is? How about the time she thought the Lion King was secretly gay propaganda? How about the time she said a bipartisan national service bill would lead to re-education camps? Oh, my God. This woman is completely, totally nuts. Which means she's a perfect candidate for the Republican nomination for president. Michelle Bachman. I'm not a witch. See how high she flies. 25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by the Laura Pickles Welsh Driving School for Famous Arabian Women, sent to us by Irish Dave. Thank you, Irish Dave, very much. I was going to do this on church night on this program, which is usually Wednesday. Right, Kathy? Isn't Wednesday? It's usually church night, but we've been gone for four nights, so had to catch up with other stuff. But so let's do it. Russ Baker over at whowhatwhy.com had this up on his website. Born again and brain damaged. Are you familiar? with this? A new study from Duke University concludes that the born again experience. Now, Duke University, that's in Durham, North Carolina, folks. I mean, it's not some pointy head liberal school up in New York. No. This is here in the South. Duke University. A new study from researchers there concludes that the born-again experience, which you can only have if you swallow up and are swallowed up in return by evangelical Christianity, the born-again experience may be connected in some way with shrinkage of a part of the brain. Sounds like a Seinfeld episode. Shrinkage. Only this is about the brain, possibly caused by stress. According to the report... significantly greater hippocampal atrophy was observed for participants reporting a life-changing religious experience. Now, how do you say it, Kathy? You're the hippocampus or hippocampus? Hippocampus. Hippocampal atrophy involves the deterioration of the brain segment involved with retention and retrieval of information. In other words, short-term and long-term memory, plus the ability to navigate between the two, right? It's sort of like when you smoke too much weed, that's all. Anyway, according to this, significant greater hippocampal atrophy was observed from baseline to final assessment among born-again Protestants, Catholics, Protestants and Catholics, compared with Protestants not identifying as born-again. These associations were not explained by psychosocial or demographic factors or baseline cerebral volume. That makes a difference how big your brain is. If you go through this experience, this born-again thing, you are going to wind up crazy. Just seriously, insane. Stay away from it. You've got to stay away from it. Hippocampal volume has been linked to clinical outcomes such as depression, dementia, Alzheimer's disease. The findings of the study indicate that hippocampal atrophy in late life may be uniquely influenced by certain types of religious factors.
Uh-oh.
I mean, what? Do you need more? You can get the study. Just go to Duke University online and read the study. As Russ Baker writes, since the process of being reborn spiritually involves a kind of cleaning of the slate, starting over, it somehow seems appropriate that it also involves a cleansing of memory. Bye! He says, this was of particular interest to me because in my book, Family of Secrets, remember that? I presented new documentation that George W. Bush may have been making a political calculation when he declared himself born again. This is from chapter 19 of Russ's book, Family of Secrets. Chapter 19 is entitled The Conversion. With his entry into Bible study, George W. Bush was reinventing himself. It was a politically savvy idea, but in truth, it was not his own. It appears that it was neither George W.'s Midland friends nor the Reverend Billy Graham who helped him see the light. It was Doug Weed. Marketing man. That's the name, Doug Weed, marketing man. Before Bush sought to establish his credentials with the religious right, during his father's vice presidency, Weed had written the Bushes a memo stressing the potential political benefits of preaching to that particular choir, the religious right. Weed wrote up everything he could think of about the evangelical movement, who they were, how they thought, why they thought that way, and how to cater to them. Weed said, I hadn't met W yet, but he knew me because he was getting all these memos. And he was basically saying, Dad, this is right. This is what people in Midland, Texas think. My born-again friends say this. He's right. When I finally met W, Weed said, George said, I've read all your stuff. It's great stuff. We're going to get this thing going. Weed had warned the Bushes that they had to be careful how they couched their conversion story. It couldn't be seen as something too radical or too tacky. So it's all a marketing idea. You get it? And as Russ Baker says, putting aside the cynicism that may have been involved, it is certainly true that George W. Bush also faced a lot of pressure having to do with his business failures and his famous marathon partying activities. Now, Russ Baker doesn't mention it, but also his coke usage. Most people who understand George W. Bush and know his history understand that he was a coke abuser, much like Rush Limbaugh was an OxyContin abuser. Like Rush Limbaugh, who relied on his house servant to go score street drugs for him, pharmaceutical street drugs, George W. Bush relied on people to go score cocaine for him. All these people are cut from the same cloth. Not that there's anything wrong with drug use. Go ahead. You know, blow your brains out. Doesn't make any difference to me. I don't think we should lock people up for it, not even Rush Limbaugh. But at least acknowledge what it is. But I digress. As Russ Baker says, it's interesting to note that the Duke researchers' speculation on what may be causing this pattern of George W. Bush's is summed up by Scientific American. It goes like this. The authors offer the hypothesis
that the greater hippocampal atrophy in selected religious groups might be related to stress. They argue that some individuals in the religious minority or those who struggle with their beliefs experience higher levels of stress. Well, yeah, you know, if you're trying to balance whether or not you should, you know, sneak over and have sex with your neighbor, or do you want to risk that and burn in hell forever, that would probably cause a lot of stress. Anyway, this causes a release of stress hormones that are known to depress the volume of the hippocampus over time. This might also explain the fact that both non-religious as well as some religious individuals have smaller hippocampal volumes. You following me on this? People who experience an awful lot of stress, and no pun intended, but God knows there's an awful lot of stress when you have that born-again conversion, right? Oh, Lord, have mercy. Here we go. I can remember when I was a kid, man, going to that Southern Baptist church that my grandparents took me to, amen. And during revival, I mean, the preacher, Reverend Dunham, did this every night, every Sunday night, but especially during revival, Lord have mercy, the call to come down to the front of the church. Woo! And accept the Lord Jesus Christ as your one personal Savior, to be washed again in the blood of the Lamb. And, you know, I'm a little kid sitting there going, where do they keep the blood? And you can see people sitting in the pew start to tremble, get all trembling, and start to sweat, especially, you know, the drunkards and the ones who are cheating on their spouses. And it was back in the day when you could call somebody a drunkard. Sounds like something out of Mark Twain, doesn't it? A drunkard. But they'd get all twitchy and start sweating because there was no air conditioning in the church, of course. And they'd get all twitchy and everything. And then the Reverend Dunham would stand up there behind the pulpit and he would start to exhort the audience, or the congregation, excuse me, to come on down. We have the deacons here in the front of the church. We'll take care of you and minister you and help you make this decision. Well, there was an awful lot of stress in that. A lot of stress. And what this report from Duke University seems to indicate is that the stress caused, in part, by the born-again experience tends to release hormones which tend to shrink your hippocampus, which tends to make you crazy. Just flat out nuts. Sponsored by the Laura Pickles Welsh Driving School for Famous Arabian Women, as reported on by Irish Dave. Thank you, Irish Dave, and to everybody at the driving school. So anyway, getting back to this study from Duke University, that there is a connection between this born-again experience and memory loss and dementia and Alzheimer's and just, you know, a complete shrinking, a breaking down, deterioration of part of the human brain. Why is that a surprise? You know, when you give yourself over to spooks and haints and creatures that fly around in the sky and a god or several of them who commit just mass murder against the very creatures that, according to the mythology, he created or it created. I mean, Christianity and Judaism and Islam are all religions of insanity. They're murder, they're madness, they're craziness. It's killing and destruction and. But I digress. Anyway, according to Russ Baker, if this study by Duke University is correct, then the born-again experience may involve more than overcoming unpleasant memories. You know, all those sins you committed. It may also erase memories of all kinds. So, the conclusion here regarding Bush, I realize Bush is so last decade, last century, but so when Bush claimed, Russ Baker writes, not to remember details of his military service or about decisions he made regarding Iraq and other controversies, he just might have been telling the truth. If, of course, that's predicated on the belief that, or on the possibility that his religious conversion was real to George. I mean, it's not real in any kind of reality-based universe, but in Bush's mind. I don't know about you, but I have watched people who have gone through this born-again conversion. And it is not unlike a kind of psychosis. That's the way I always pictured it, a kind of psychosis to allow yourself to be told that the old can pass away in this flood of blood, you know, washed in the blood of Jesus or the Lamb or whatever it is they've sacrificed that particular night. It's hard for me to put it into any kind of rational thought because it's so insane. It's just murderous madness. And yet, how many of this tired planet's inhabitants believes this stuff? Not just Christianity, but all the people of the book. You know, all this murder and mayhem and self-abnegation and destruction and contempt and self-loathing and until you pass through the waterfall of blood. 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 And emerge on the other side. Washed. When I was in Sunday school when I was a kid, you know, they used to show this on those cloth boards. What are those things called? You know, they were felt boards, right? They had all these little characters and people that look like European Bedouins. You know, the thing about the Middle East, the way I was taught in Bible school and in Sunday school, none of these people look like Middle Easterners. They all look like they were from Norway, you know. But there they were, tending flocks and, you know, raising the dead and, you know, whatever they were doing. But they were all blonde and blue-eyed or raven-haired or, well, not even that, redheads, a lot of redheads. So the women especially were redheads. But I used to, you know, I'd sit there transfixed in Sunday school and Vacation Bible School and all of it, you know, just sitting there going, oh, really? Is this stuff true? And even at age 6 and 7 and 8, you know, my little mind just said, no, man, these people are nuts. These people telling me this. You know, my grandma, bless her heart, but she's got a crazy streak too. I mean, even as a young kid. So I watched some of the religious right politicians talk about their stories of their conversion and their being born again and the veil of tears and the avalanche and waterfall of blood and the slaughter. You know, I just think, you people are going to lead. You're going to lead this country. You're going to lead this country, and you believe that? You're going to lead the United States of America to what? Right straight into the hell that you folks have created. That's what you're going to do. Right into destruction and death, because the belief system of these right-wing Christians mixed up with their political belief system, there's no way out. There's no way out. Remember what Falwell and Roberts and the rest of these thugs said after the events of September 11, 2001. That God got sick of the queers and the liberals and the feminists and therefore decided to murder 3,000 people. I mean, this is really poisonous stuff, and we're out of time. Oh, damn. And I was just getting, see, normally we should do this on Wednesday night, Kathy, on church night, but oh, well. And I didn't, a couple of things here I didn't get to. Well, we'll do it come Monday. Oh, no, not this song. All right, I'll see you Monday. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin, Kenny, wherever you are. I'm going straight to